I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back to The Stacks. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas. And before we get to our conversation with author Joe Piazza, another great way you can support this podcast is by shopping through the show notes that are on our website. You can also shop through your phone. So any link down there in the show notes, a small commission of those purchases goes to support the stack. So if that's something that you're able to do, we greatly appreciate it. Also, make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you listen. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. The reviews go a long way and they really help. Here's one of our most recent reviews. It comes from Punch1111. They say, Tracy is so brilliant and funny. Thank you. These podcasts are very thought-provoking. I've been hesitant to listen since I haven't always read the books they discuss, but I get a lot out of it either way, especially the interview episodes. Love the format and goodbye TBR, to be read list. So many great recs on here. Thank you so much, Punch1111. We appreciate it. And as you can tell, these reviews are super short and they go a long way to helping us get new audiences and make the podcast that y'all love to listen to. So please rate and review if you get a second. Okay, let's get to the show. This week, our guest is Joe Piazza. Joe is an author, journalist, and the host of The Committed Podcast. Joe's newest book is Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, and it's just been chosen as Marie Claire Magazine's inaugural book club pick. So go check it out, and we're going to talk a bunch about the book. No spoilers, don't worry. All right, so here's our conversation with Joe Piazza. All right, everybody, I am here today with Joe Piazza. Joe is the author of 8 books, including her newest release, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. Joe is also the host of the podcast Committed. Formerly, Joe was an editor and columnist for the New York Daily News, and her work can be found in other publications like the New York Times, Glamour Magazine, Slate, and much, much more. Joe, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, and thanks for these chocolate croissants. I want to say on the podcast that you provided chocolate croissants, and that's just the sweetest thing, and I really... If you hear me eating, I'm eating a chocolate croissant.
Enjoy them, and you can take them on the road with you.
I will.
They're amazing.
I will.
Okay, so that's like your professional like little rundown, but tell us a little bit about you, where you come from, who you are.
Yeah, so I'm a Philly girl. I grew up in Philly and then went to UPenn, literally like right down the street from my house, and then moved to New York for 13 years to be a journalist. My first journalism job was actually as an intern at the New York Times. I did it while I was in college. They put up an ad in the college newspaper office, and then 9/11 happened. And so then they never called me back. So then I just showed up at their office. I just kept showing up like every day at the Trenton Bureau of the New York Times in the State House. And finally they're like, I guess you work here now. And I'm like, I do work here now. And
you're like, where are my business cards?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, pour me some whiskey. Let's go. They actually had bottles of whiskey and they smoked in the office back then. That's how old I am. I know. But I kind of loved that because it was like this classic newspaper office.
That's not that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. No. And so then I moved to New York and went to Columbia. And the only job that I could get at a New York newspaper in New York City was as a gossip columnist, a gossip column assistant. And I knew nothing about celebrities. Wow. And so, but I did it. And I think it was good because I knew nothing about celebrities. I didn't care. I had no celebrity fear whatsoever. It's like going on safari and being able to go up and just like touch the elephant.
And they're like, who's this person who doesn't think
who's this person who like has no interest in me whatsoever? And I'm like, who are you again? And they're like, Jay-Z. And I'm like, whatever.
Come on. You knew who Jay-Z was.
I actually didn't. So that's my first story is that
you're like my mom.
I got sent out to cover Sean Combs. Do we call him P. Diddy or Puff Daddy? I don't know. It was I think it was Puff Daddy.
Sure.
His birthday party. And I came back and told my boss. I was like, I talked to this really nice guy named Sean all night. And he's like, this guy? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, that was Jay-Z. He's like, I'm going to fire you. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I'll get better. And I made flashcards and it was good. And so I was there for a long time and I like, you know, kind of consider myself this New Yorker. And then I recently, 3 years ago, got married and moved to San Francisco, which is like a different planet compared to New York. Right. But I fell madly in love with this like mountain climbing San Francisco hippie. And we got engaged in 3 months and married in 9 months and made a baby. And so
a cute baby.
He's so cute.
I will link to Joe's Instagram so you can see her cute baby.
He's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's just like I look at him a lot and I'm like, how did this happen? Like, yeah. I mean, I know that like most mothers think their babies are cute, but I'm like, you're like really handsome.
Well, I think most babies are hideous and I think your baby's cute.
Thank you. That's cool. I always thought most babies were hideous too, but like you're not allowed to say that to people.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't tell other people.
You can't tell other people that their babies are ugly.
You just go like, oh, look at that baby you made.
You made a baby.
Wow, how old is that baby over there that belongs to you? That's
exactly.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So, and now I write books and do a podcast full time, which is kind of like living the dream.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Your podcast is called Committed.
It is.
And it kind of came out of
one of my books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about both of those things?
Yeah. So when I was getting married, I mean, because I was old, I was 34 when I got engaged.
Okay.
And that's geriatric, practically, according to every romantic comedy ever.
Sure. That's fair.
I had no idea how to be married. I was like, how do I be a feminist and a modern woman and be someone's wife? Like, this is so antiquated and ridiculous. And I was a travel editor at Yahoo at the time. So Yahoo was paying for me to fly all over the world. Mm. And I'm like, what if I could interview people in different cultures about what it means to be a wife and what it means to be married? And so I did. And thank you, Marissa Meyer, for paying for me to research this book. God bless you and God bless Yahoo, RIP. So I did and interviewed everyone from polygamous tribes in Tanzania and Kenya to Orthodox Jewish women in Jerusalem, to very fancy French women who wanted me to buy $400 underwear.
Oh.
I did not buy $400 underwear.
Yahoo wasn't paying for that.
Yahoo was, I could not figure out how to line item
my
expenses.
Yeah, no. Okay.
And the book that came out of that was How to Be Married. And then How Stuff Works optioned that. And we turned it into Committed. And it's narrative storytelling about interesting couples. So we have a couple of porn stars who are
that
monogamous.
Really
I love them. So they're coming to my book event tonight.
Are they?
The
oh my God, so I can meet them.
You're going to meet Mick and Annika. porn stars who are monogamous in life, but have sex with other people on screen.
Right.
A couple who was blown up together in the Boston Marathon bombing. A couple who's been married for 28 years and has Down syndrome and no one thought that they should get married at all. These couples are so incredible.
Yeah. I started listening to the podcast when I found out you were going to come on this show. And I was like, oh, I'll check it out. And then I listened to the first episode. And then one of the women from the second episode, or the woman from the second episode, she passed away. And I saw your post and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to listen to this one. And then I was like, okay, let me listen to the third one. And I listened to all of them in like 2 days.
I told
everyone about it. It's just really I'm not very interested in other people's marriages normally, but the people are so – it's like they're almost extreme. And so it makes your marriage or my marriage feel also extreme in a way.
Totally.
Like, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I'm so cool. I'm married to Jake. Like, this is badass. Even though, like, we're the most boring normal.
Totally. But the thing is, everyone's marriage has a story, right?
Right. Like, right. Everyone's marriage is boring and extreme.
Boring and extreme and exciting time. And yeah. exciting to you. And right. everyone creates their own narrative about right. their marriage.
Totally.
And I mean, it's funny because when I tell people, I'm like, oh, it's a podcast about marriage. They're like, oh, God. And they think it's like, you know, relationship advice. And I'm like, no, trust me. It's just listen to like one episode. You'll like it. Yeah. And then they do. And then they listen. Then they binge them. It's good.
The astronauts one. Also one of my favorites.
Yes.
And my absolute favorite, because I, like you, enjoy newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I'm a sports fan, was the baseball writers.
Susan and Dan.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also from Oakland.
Oh, yeah. So you know. Like, and they cover the A's.
Yeah. They cover the A's. I love sport. Like, that episode, I was, like, folding my laundry, just being like, this is all I want to be listening to. Where is their movie?
I know.
Where is their movie?
So, you know, people have talked to them about turning their story into...
They're, like, not into it.
No, they're... No. I think they would be into it. And I'm supposed to have dinner with them, and I want to talk to them about turning their story into a movie, because I'm like, I could just do it better. So whoever you talk to, it would be so good. I mean, they're so, like, you know, to condense their story, they're married baseball reporters who are rivals. They're rival newspapers, and she's the star. Like, she's the one who's like the best baseball reporter in the business.
Right. Yeah.
And he just he also just, like, loves her so much. So, like, during the interview, it's fascinating to watch couples, because he just stares at her like she is just, like, the best thing that's happened since chocolate ice cream.
I love that so much.
I know.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. I'll link to the I linked everything in the show notes. It'll all be there, y'all. But go check out Committed. There's an episode for you. There's, like, what, 10?
I think there's 10 or 11 now.
Yeah.
I was going to count this morning, and then I got distracted.
Well, there's a handful. More than a handful. Okay, so you talked about covering celebrities. But you also covered politics, elections.
I did.
And while obviously Charlotte Walsh is about politics, and we'll get there in a second, but what would you say is, like, the biggest change you've seen in the way that covering politics and covering celebrity has changed? Because in 2001...
Everything was different.
Like, our relationship to celebrities, our relationship to politicians. Obviously, the current administration has taken celebrity to a new level, but that started to change... even with President Obama.
I think it even changed in the 90s. I was actually just listening on the way over here to Slow Burn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Also such a good podcast.
And the new season is about Monica Lewinsky. And, you know, I was, like, in middle school when all of this was happening. And so it's interesting to get caught up. But that was really the turning point, I think, where we started covering politicians like we cover celebrities.
Right.
And people ask me – so I covered politics at the same time as I was covering celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
As a gossip assistant and then a gossip columnist, I would get sent to all of the campaign events because we were covering politicians like celebrities.
Sure.
And it was funny because one of our top political reporters asked me – she was like, oh, my God, it's so cute you're doing this. Maybe I'll go to Bungalow 8 one night. And I was like, you won't get in. I'm like, what I do is hard. And I think covering celebrities makes you fearless in a way, too. And so that's how I got into covering politics. And then I've covered 4 presidential races. I've covered, you know, countless midterm and then local races, too. And I think the real turning point is that we're covering politicians like celebrities now. And the 10-second news cycle.
Sure.
And so I think people are, one, exhausted by all the news. We have too much news. It's just too much. I took a break after I finished writing Charlotte Walsh because I was living in the news cycle, essentially, for 3 months. And I'm only just emerging from it.
Yeah.
Where
it's a crazy time to be emerging.
I would listen to NPR and, like, the NPR newscast every morning. And I'd read the Sunday Times cover to cover on the weekend. And I would read the Sunday Long Reads newsletter from Don Van Atta, which is great, which curates all of the best stories you should read all week. And that was it.
Right.
So I wasn't reading Twitter. I wasn't reading Facebook. I took all of social media off my phone.
That's so
I
nice.
Still, like, I still usually only use social media on my husband's phone, which is, like, my dirty secret.
Right.
And I felt less anxiety. I felt more informed.
Right.
Because what I did read, I was internalizing more. And I actually feel like the constant news cycle just makes us stupid.
Right. That's true.
And I think both politicians and celebrities need to be covered, particularly celebrities. My argument for people that are like, celebrity news is vacuous and stupid. I'm like, celebrities influence you probably more than most people in the world.
I mean, they make the culture.
Yeah. So the Fourth Estate, like, needs to act on celebrities. Mm-hmm. It is incredibly important.
Right.
But I don't think we need to know every nuance of our politicians' private lives. I don't think that we need to have a think piece on, you know, even the length of Donald Trump's tie, but then most certainly on how female candidates are completely scrutinized for their hair, their makeup, their shoe, right. their size of heel, you know, right. whether or not they smile enough, how white are their teeth, like all of those things. I mean, it's just noise right. and it's distracting. And I think it's when I get on my like soapbox, I'm like, it's destroying society and our brains, but it kind of is. Yeah.
What would you say in covering both celebrities and politicians, like, is the big difference? Or is there even a big difference?
Celebrities have better hair.
Better clothes.
Celebrities, better Botox. Actually, sure. And that's not even true anymore.
Not anymore.
Politicians are getting better Botox. Yeah. But celebrities do still have better clothes. There's really not that much of a difference.
No.
Both groups of people are so surrounded by people creating their brand mm-hmm. that it almost feels like you're not covering a real person anyway. You're just covering a message.
Right.
You're covering a creation that someone else wants you to see.
Right.
And someone else wants you to cover. And both celebrities and politics just feel so completely manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the reason I wanted to write this book. I'm like, and for the book, I interviewed hundreds of women who'd run for office, hundreds of women who had worked on campaigns. And I'm like, I just kind of want to puncture that veneer a little bit.
Right.
And like get to the real human being.
Right.
Behind the facade.
Right.
And even with Hillary Clinton, we just saw a facade all the time. And I'm friends with so many people who are very close with her, who are on the campaign trail with her. And they're like, she is like a wonderful, real human. And when I've met her in person, you see that. But most voters never saw that.
No. Right. Yes, I've heard the same thing from my family's involved in politics. So
yeah,
I've heard the same thing about her for years, actually. I mean, my aunt worked for Clinton, so has known the Clintons for a long time and, you know, loves Hillary as a human.
As a human.
But it's, I mean, you got to know people who know to tell you that.
To tell you that. Exactly. And yet no one feels that way about Donald Trump.
No. Well, no, I have heard that he is a really, like, when you're in the room with him, it is Clinton, Bill Clinton-esque. Like,
he's charismatic.
Charismatic.
So I covered him as a celebrity in New York for years and years. In fact, he used to call me when I was like a 23-year-old assistant at the New York Daily News. Anytime we wrote about him, Joe, that is my real hair. How dare you say that's not my real hair? And I'm like, I'm 23. I just graduated from college. I'm really hungover. Why are you calling me this early
leave
in the morning?
Alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. And like, ugh. Yeah. But he was very charismatic. He also presented as crazy.
Sure.
So like, you
he
know,
still presents
just,
as crazy.
And he still presents as crazy.
That's like
but
his,
like everyone that I know that spent a lot of time with him is like, he's almost like a robot. Like he is like this kind of charismatic robot.
It just makes me so sad. Okay. We've kind of dipped our toe into Charlotte Walsh.
Yeah.
I want to dive in a little more. So you said that you interviewed lots of women candidates, which I've heard you talk about in other places, other podcasts and things, which I think is awesome. You approach this book a lot like a piece of nonfiction.
I did. I can't help it. It's like,
that's
it's
who
a,
you are.
I have a problem. Like I have like a journalism problem.
Sure.
I've approached all of my fiction like it was nonfiction. And people ask me all the time in interviews, they're like, well, why didn't you just do a nonfiction book?
Right.
And I was like, well, I genuinely believe that fiction changes hearts and minds in a way that nonfiction doesn't. And
that's so interesting.
And people also will pick up a novel yes. that would not pick up a nonfiction political book.
I think that that's true. I am a huge nonfiction person.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my go-to.
Right.
So like fiction for me is like, God, am I going to like this? Which is one of the reasons I really liked your book, because I was like, this doesn't feel that fiction-y. Like it had
right.
like a plot and it like moved and it felt like real life.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say that because I think the opposite. I'm like, fiction never changes my mind. Like, I don't feel connected to fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that it's a lot harder to get someone
to pick up nonfiction.
And,
you know, we live in such a partisan world right now. It would have been really hard.
Really hard.
To get people to pick that up. But, you know, I say all the time, like, if a man had written Charlotte Walsh, it would not have been characterized as a summer beach read.
No.
It just wouldn't. I'm very lucky the cover's not pink.
Right.
But I'm happy that it was characterized as a summer beach read because
people are
picked it up and read it at the beach that would not read about politics. And so then people come back to me and they're like, you know what? Don't care about politics. Really curious about women running for office now.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, that's what I wanted to do.
You're like,
so,
have you heard of Emily's List?
Which is why we have a list we have resources in the back of the book where people can go and find more women running for office.
Yeah.
I met Stephanie Schrock, the head of Emily's List the other day in person for the first time. And I was like, thank you for letting me make up quotes from you in my fiction book. And she's like, of course.
She's like,
wonderful.
No problem. Thanks for talking about it.
Thanks for talking about women running.
Yeah. She was probably happier that you were talking about it than you were making stuff.
I know. She's like, it's great. She's like, you totally got me.
What do you think is like the most common thing you heard from the women candidates and then the most unique thing? I know you're not saying who the candidates were.
Yeah. And I'm not, just because the only way to get people to talk to me openly was like to say I'm never revealing their names.
And I don't think you have to, because you wrote a piece of fiction.
Like, exactly.
So you don't have to quote these people.
Exactly. The most common thing really is just being scrutinized on a daily basis for their appearance and how exhausting that is. I mean, a male candidate genuinely can roll out of bed and throw on whatever suit he had on last night and just go to an event. And for women, it takes hours and hours, and then they're still scrutinized. Like, your hair's too curly, your hair's too straight, you should wear more suits, less dresses. You should wear more dresses. You should be more feminine.
Right.
And that for years and years, women have also been told to run like a man. Mm-hmm. And so Charlotte Walsh is also told to run like a man. They're told to appear strong. Like, they're told not to have their families with them most of the time. But that's changing. And that's all changed in just the past 18 months.
Right.
That now women are like, you know what? Running like a man didn't really work for us.
Right.
So now we're going to run like women. And we're going to be open and honest and vulnerable and authentic and listen to people. And this is the first time it's happened, and it's going to be really interesting in the midterm elections to see if it works. And I think it will work, because I think voters want something that's real now.
Yeah, I agree. Was there anything like specifically unique that stuck out to you that someone said that you were like, oh, I haven't heard that yet? Or was everything kind of...
I mean, I kind of knew a lot of it going into it. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things that I realized was, so mailers are still a big part of campaigns, like that you get like a flyer in the mail. I mean, we don't, because we don't check our mail.
I worked on a campaign, so.
Yeah, so you know.
And but door hangers, too.
Door hangers. Ugh. So in those pictures, the men are usually told to be in a picture with their family holding a child. Mm-hmm. The women are told no children and to be in a power pose, arms crossed, hand under chin, look smart, you're thinking.
Right.
And I never thought about that before until someone showed me a table full of like female mailers and male mailers. And that was just fascinating
to me.
That's
so interesting. Yeah.
Well, and then also with the social media, which I knew, but I didn't know the extent of it, that women are attacked online 300% more than men. And one of my friends who worked on the campaign, on Hillary's campaign, they did an experiment where she tweeted something and a male staffer tweeted something and they saw she was just attacked. And even if it's something like really innocuous, called terrible things, and he just like, he got retweeted or someone was like, cool, that's interesting. And just, so I think I knew what I was going to hear going into it, but I didn't know the level of it.
Got it.
And I didn't know how entrenched it was. And then one last thing too. That it's the women journalists who are often harder on female candidates, who often judge them more harshly. And I think that that's something that we all have to reckon with.
Doesn't surprise me.
How are we covering women candidates, and what should our role be in covering women candidates?
I've heard you say this in other places where you said, you know, you've had to think about what you were going to say about a woman candidate. Like, would I say this about a man candidate?
Yeah.
And the other day, this is like such an anecdote. I was watching TV and there was this like really unattractive woman who was running, or no, who wasn't running. She was in office somewhere.
Yeah.
And I was like sitting on the couch and I was like, that's a really unattractive woman. And then I was like, would I say that was a really unattractive man? And then I was like, I would.
Would you?
And so then I said, turned to my husband. I said, she's really unattractive.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
But I like had to have a moment of like, am I being an asshole, or like, you know? And that's like, real, I'm also very vain. I live in LA. It's a terrible thing.
It's a terrible
but
place.
It was just an interesting moment for me. Cause like, I talk really bad about the way Ted Cruz looks.
Of course.
You know,
I
was like, so okay, I talk bad about male politicians' looks too.
I would
but
say
I, like,
this
didn't
too.
Critique her outfit cause I didn't care about it. You know, but it was just like an interesting moment of like, am I being a sexist or am I just being an asshole?
Or you just being an asshole, which is fine.
I'm fine to be an asshole.
Totally
that's like
fine.
Part of my brand.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that that's what everyone needs to do. Be like, okay, would we say this if it were a man?
Right.
Would we care if it were a man?
Would
we be interested? And another really great example is, and women who, like, women Democrats who work on campaigns told me they've experienced this bias too, if they look at a candidate and she's got young kids and they're like, God, how's she going to do it?
Right.
And then they hate themselves for thinking that.
Right.
But, and they would never think it about a man, but they still think it because we're women and we're like, we know that how hard that is. And we're like, how is she going how's to she gonna do that?
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. I have a question about actually writing your book.
Yes.
There's like a lot of characters in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And you name them all.
Yeah.
How do you pick names for your characters?
Oh my God, it's so hard. Sometimes,
this was honestly like after like the eighth character, I was like, I need to know where these names came from.
So sometimes they just come to me. Sometimes I'm like, this is just your name. Okay. Charlotte was interesting. Her original name was Elizabeth. And we talked to a lot of pollsters who said that candidates with two syllable names tend to do better than candidates with three syllable names.
Huh.
Very interesting.
Male and female?
Just female.
Just female.
Just female. And I also, but, and then I realized that I wanted it to be kind of ambiguous. And so her nickname is Charlie.
Right.
And the original title was Charlie Walsh Likes to Win. And I kind of wanted people to feel this moment of like, oh, when they realized it was Charlie was a woman and not a man.
Yeah.
But then that got nixed and we changed it to Charlotte. So some of the names really just come to me. I'm like, all right, this is your name. And then after you start naming a lot of characters, one of my tics is that I start naming characters with all the same first letter for some reason. And so in this book, it was A, and we have a lot of Anne, Annie, Anne-Marie, Alice. And so her assistant, her chief of staff's original name was Amina, and we realized it was just too many A's. And
I love
so
her.
We switched it to Leela. Like literally in the last draft, we switched it to Leela.
Well, I was saying it wrong the whole time until they called her Lee. And then I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because I think I was calling her Layla.
Layla. Yeah. And so then we switched that. But yeah, it's interesting. Like I go for a run or a walk or like a run walk every morning. And that's usually when like the names come to
the
me.
Names come.
Or late at night, right before I go to sleep. Roz, we changed Roz's name late in the game too.
Okay. Cuz
like I'll be watching something and I'm like, "Oh, that's that character's name."
Sure.
But I always put placeholders in.
Okay.
So that they
so
always
when you
have
can
a name.
Control but find and then
yeah, replace. Exactly. But I always know when it's not the right name and I'm going to have to change it.
That makes sense. My last little question about this book, a lot of our listeners have asked me to ask authors this. How different was the book that you started and the book that is now here? Was there a big change? Like, did you know what you wanted this to be?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The book is pretty similar.
Okay.
In the beginning, it was way more of a satire.
Okay.
And I write satire in fiction. The Knockoff and Fitness Junkie were hardcore satires. I'm very good at satire.
Okay.
So it was very, and it was very easy for me to go to that satirical place too. And then as we watched the Trump presidency unfold, I was like, shit, we're living a satire,
right?
And I don't want to write one. And so I pushed it to be a much stronger narrative, and do a lot like deeper character study with the book. And so that really is the big change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, had Hillary won,
so you were planning this before,
kind of. We had already been talking about it, my editor and I.
Okay.
So had the election been different, I think it would have been a deeper satire on how the media treats women generally.
Mm-hmm.
It became something pretty different after what happened in November 2016.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. So yeah, go read her book. It's called Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. I really liked it. People will be shocked to hear that because it's like not something that I normally would read. It's like very out of my wheelhouse. Like,
yeah.
I like heavy, dark nonfiction investigative journalism, but like I said, it kind of has a non-fiction-y feel to it because it's very specific, which I think sometimes fiction lacks specificity, which is what irritates me.
Drives me nuts.
That's what one of the things that I really like about the book. Also, I won't ruin anything, but the ending, I'm sure lots of people have feelings about.
Lots of people have feelings.
I saw it coming, though. I knew.
Lots of people have
feelings.
Feelings about the ending. But
it was the only way you could end the book.
It was the only way to end the book.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to move on to your taste in books and reading and all
awesome.
That stuff. So now we get to talk everyone's favorite part. Let's going to start with two books you love and one book you hate. And if you don't feel comfortable saying you hate a book, it can be a book that you dislike. Because I know some people get weird about that.
Of course. Yeah. So two books I love. I feel like I get criticized for this sometimes because there's such a but a big push for all of us to be feminists all the time. Mm. And so to only like, I'm only going to talk about women authors.
No,
and,
don't
no
do that.
So I mean, the Great Gatsby is my favorite book and I reread it constantly. I just think it's so well done, well written, and it's short. And like, and I actually, because I'm a newspaper journalist, I appreciate brevity.
Love a short like, book.
I can sit down and it's perfect. That's the thing. It shouldn't be any more than it is.
Right.
A 400 page novel, I'm really like, God, you are just masturbating this whole time.
Right.
So The Great Gatsby, and I love The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen. I actually love Jonathan
That's
Franzen.
A long book.
That it is also a long book, but he does it really well. And so like I have one short book, one long book.
Uh-huh.
And Jonathan Franzen gets so much flack, but the fact is I actually think he writes women really well.
Huh.
Shockingly, because I like the majority of male authors do not write women well. And I'm like usually sadly disappointed anytime a man is writing a woman protagonist. Mm-hmm. But I think he does.
Interesting. I read Freedom.
Okay. But I like Freedom too.
Legit. That's like my nightmare kind of book.
Yeah.
That's like the opposite of what I like.
Totally.
So I read it though. I finished.
Yeah. Good. Ooh. Good. Because so I stopped finishing books that I'm not enjoying. And actually, instead of saying one book that I hate, I will say like, I think we have to admit it when we don't finish something.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. And so like, I've tried to read Jennifer Egan's Manhattan Beach 5 times now.
Just wasn't for you.
It's not for me. I can't finish it. And I love everything else that she's written.
That's like, interesting.
Visit from the Goon Squad is one of my favorite books. And I can't get through Manhattan Beach. And now it's been chosen as like the book club book of
for
all
New
of
York,
New York.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God.
You're like, well,
all right.
You could still go to the book club conversation.
I could still go to the book club conversation.
It. Yeah,
exactly.
What's the last great book you read?
So I'm like you. I'm like picky in what types of books that I read. I don't usually like short stories.
Okay.
I also like think it's like, oh my God, look at your adorable MFA project. But I just finished Florida by Lauren Groff and Curtis Sittenfeld's You Think It, I'll Say It. And they like blew me away as short story collections. I've been recommending them both all summer. And I'm like, everyone needs to read these. They are fantastic.
Okay. I'm like you. I'm not really into short stories.
But try
I'll
it.
Check it.
Try
out.
Both of them because the things that they do in 15 pages are remarkable.
Okay.
And like, I literally hate short stories. It's like the part of The New Yorker I don't read. I don't read the listings and I don't read the short stories. And sometimes I don't read the arts coverage. But
sometimes you don't read any of it because
they
come every day and you're like,
and
how
sometimes
is there more?
It's just in a pile in the bathroom and that's okay.
It's very much okay. How do you pick your next book? Like, do you use reviews or friend suggestions, Bookstagram?
Friend suggestions,
mostly.
I also get sent a lot of books.
Right.
So friend and editor suggestions, and I think about this all the time, right? Because I'm like, how do people choose books?
How do people pick books?
I love Bookstagram. I think it's getting a little saturated.
Uh-huh.
I think that Bookstagram was better 9 months ago.
Yeah, it's all the same books.
It's usually all the same books.
Right.
And I'm not and I think it's gotten saturated much like, you know, everything online now that the publishing houses have gotten aware to it. So now everyone's getting free books all the time. And I loved Bookstagram when it was, I bought this book. I'm invested in this book.
Right.
As opposed to, look at this stack of free books that I got.
Right. Well, and I think it becomes an interesting conversation again of like, not only what books are we seeing, but who's getting these free books?
Who's getting
what
them?
What kind of reviewer, what kind of person? Which is something that I think a lot about as a woman and a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Black Klansmen, all the Black accounts that I follow, women who are Black who have accounts, they all got free copies of that.
Yeah, of course.
But like nobody got free copies of like The Incendiaries.
Exactly.
Except for white women. And I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Like you don't think that we could review that?
Yeah, we can't review that.
We can't
that
talk
book.
About that
yeah.
book. Or even just like which books by people of color get a lot of light. Like The Incendiaries got so much run.
So much.
And I have it. I bought it though. I have it and I haven't read it yet, but it's just interesting which books by people of color are chosen and which books by women.
Mm-hmm.
And Bookstagram also is very woman author heavy.
Oh, of course it
which
is.
Which I think is interesting because that's not really reflective of the real world. And
no.
While I'm trying not to buy books written by white men as much, I'm trying to use the library for that.
Yeah.
there's a lot of books that are really great that are written by white men.
A lot of books that are really great written by white men.
That people have never heard of exactly. in that world.
Exactly. So, yeah, and I feel like Bookstagram has also become just this echo chamber. It's sure. a lot of people talking to each other about these exactly what you said, right. same books.
The same books. So, That's why I like to go on there and drop just some giant nonfiction nightmare. And people are like,
totally.
What is this?
I'm
about to read Executioner Song. And some of my friends were like, what's that? I'm like, you've never heard of this book? Like
yes.
this book from like years and years ago that changed the world and made true crime a thing? Like,
well, again? I also like to bring old books back because yeah. I mean, I think too many books are being published these
sure.
days. Again, just contributing to the noise. And so a book's life cycle at this point is like
so short.
Right. I mean, a lot of the publishers expect it to be a blockbuster the first week out. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then it kind of starts to get ignored.
Sure.
I mean, I've gotten really lucky and I'm really honest about this too, because everyone's like, oh my gosh, you've gotten such great press. And I'm like, yeah, but I was also a journalist. Like, I know everyone. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy for me to create. I'm not saying like Charlotte Walsh is wonderful. It deserves the press, but there's so many books out there that like can't
right.
keep the life cycle going.
Well, so you have kind of like the inside track. And also your book is so timely moment.
And it is really timely.
Like it is.
And that's not an accident. I mean,
right.
come on.
Of
yeah.
course. I mean, if you wanted it to be not timely, you probably wouldn't have had it be the 2018
exactly.
you know, midterm. You would have
exactly.
just said a midterm. I feel that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like it is of this moment. So it makes sense that it would be getting.
Right. Of course.
This
that it can
attention.
Get this moment. But
yeah.
like I, yeah. So I like to bring back books that, you know, from a couple of years ago that I'm like, these are wonderful.
Yeah.
And these should be on your TBR pile right. next to your beautiful flowers and
yeah.
latte.
Well, you know. That's one of my goals, is to read at least one book a month that's from like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Just to like throw them back in.
Throw them back in.
But I also like to, I mean, I like Shakespeare and shit. So I read like old, boring things everyone else hates. I don't care. You don't have to read it. I'm reading it. Okay. What's maybe like a book that you just love to recommend to people?
There's so many. It's such a problem. So you sent me this list and I was like, I don't know. Just one. It's so tricky. I mean, I do recommend Gatsby to people
okay.
all the time. I'm like, right now I'm recommending a book written by one of my best friends, No One Tells You This, mm. by Glynis McNichol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm giving it out like a pedophile gives out candy,
candy
to children. I carry like five of them with
oh
me
God,
at
I
a time
it.
And hand them to people. It's just so good. It just kind of redefines what it means to be a woman
yeah.
right now in the world.
It's about her being 40 and not wanting to be married or have kids or any of that stuff.
Right, exactly. But it's the thing about No One Tells You This is that it doesn't hit you over the head with it
mm-hmm.
the way that some other mm-hmm. books do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, this is my life. And so in a way, it normalizes
Got it.
That idea instead of being kind of a diatribe about it. And it's not whiny. A lot
mm-hmm.
of the books on this subject are very whiny.
Mm-hmm. That's true. What's the last good book someone recommended to you?
The Mothers by Britt Bennett.
I read that last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like such a great book. And like, again, like now I feel like people aren't talking about that anymore, but I'm like, can we like talk about the
can
books that
about,
came out last
yeah.
year that are like still wonderful?
I fucking love that cover.
I love, it's a beautiful cover.
Oh my God. So beautiful.
Cover. Yeah.
What's the best book you've ever received as a gift?
Oh, wow. This one is also hard. Tuesdays with Maury.
We read that in high school.
See, I liked it.
I love that book.
I liked it. It was so sweet. But, you know, it was a good gift because I wouldn't have picked it up on my own.
Hmm.
It's the kind of book that I'm like,
he's a journalist.
Yeah.
He's like a major old
But I'm like, that's just
guy.
Like not my thing, but it's so wonderful.
It's so good. Are there any things that you wish were different about your reading life or like the way that you read?
No, I actually, you know, I have this really healthy reading life and people ask all the time, they're like, well, you've got a 1-year-old and a podcast and you're writing another book and, you know, usually a job,
mm-hmm.
a full-time job too. And I'm like, you know, I just kind of make time for it. So I read at night
mm-hmm.
and I go to bed, go into bed an hour early.
Got it.
And I'll read for an hour every single night. And I probably read one book a week.
Do you ever fall asleep?
Sometimes.
That's my problem reading
yeah.
at night. I mean, I do read at night.
Yeah,
I started waking up an hour early.
Okay. See, I can't do that. Like
That's
in
harder.
The morning, I'm just like, I'm
mm-hmm.
useless in the
sure.
morning. So yeah, so I read at night, but I get ideas. So I take notes at night.
Mm.
So I do fall asleep with a pen. And like, so our sheets are all covered in ink. Yeah.
I love that. Are there any genres that you avoid?
No.
No. You'll pick it up.
No. I mean, I pick up most things and I try most things. I don't. And it depends what I'm doing. So if I'm writing fiction, because I write both fiction and nonfiction, if I'm writing fiction, I try to just read fiction.
Got it.
And if I'm writing nonfiction, I try to read nonfiction.
Do you prefer writing one to the other?
Recently, I prefer fiction. Like I said, I had a baby 14 months ago. I wrote the first draft of Charlotte Welsh and sent it in while I was in labor.
Oh.
I was bouncing on the yoga ball. And sent in the first draft. And that's how my editor and agent like texted me. And they're like, are you really? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. So just let's not talk for like a couple of days.
Yeah.
And
send me your notes in a week.
Send me your notes in 6 weeks. but I find fiction a lot easier right now because, I mean, I don't do as much reporting.
Okay.
I still report. Mm-hmm. But like finding time to do reporting is exhausting right now.
I see. Okay. That's interesting. What's your favorite work or piece of political fiction and or nonfiction, since you wrote a political piece of fiction?
Totally, yeah. So fiction is Curtis Sittenfeld's American Wife, okay. Which is just great.
I've never heard of that. I gotta check
it
out.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, it's just it's a thinly veiled novel about Laura Bush.
Ooh.
And so I have this dream that I want to do the same thing, but with Melania Trump, because sure. I'm fascinated by her. I'm like, could I please just create Melania Trump's like inner world? Mm-hmm. I was talking to, because we're in LA, a TV exec the other day who was like, maybe Melania Trump's actually like a superhero who at night is like going out and solving the world's
she
problems.
Wishes.
And I'm like, maybe, probably not, but maybe.
She gets the best edit by the world.
I know
everyone
she does.
Everyone thinks that she's like this. I'm like, look.
No. There's, I don't know. I also just keep thinking about like Manchurian Candidate. I'm like, maybe she's controlling everything in there.
I have a more cynical take on her than the general population. I
want to hear it.
I just don't think that she knows exactly what she's doing. And I think that when you marry someone, you know who they are.
Oh, you know exactly who they are. And you know what you're getting.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't want people to be like, oh, she does. I'm like, no, she knows.
No. She knew.
She knew.
She knew exactly what she was getting into.
He was already who he was when they
got
married.
It's not like they got married when they were kids and then he changed. She
right.
knew.
He had already done some of his worst shit he'd done.
Exactly.
Up into that
Ivana
point.
Trump knew.
Yeah.
Marla Maples knew.
Right.
Everyone knew that married that man exactly what they were getting into.
But she's pretty, so people think that she couldn't be evil.
Exactly. She's pretty, and she looks like she probably smells good.
Right.
And they're like, oh, she can't be evil. And people think the same thing about Ivanka.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I don't. what about your favorite work of political nonfiction?
Primary Colors, which Joe Klein pretended was fiction but wasn't.
I love that. How do you read? Ebook? Hard copies?
No, regular books. Hard copies, paperbacks, but
other
like actual. Sometimes, yeah, but I'm not lately because I'm listening to a lot of podcasts when I'm driving. But if I'm on long road trips, I'll do audiobooks. But I don't think I've done an audiobook since Go Set a Watchman. A few years ago.
Did you like that?
No, I hated it. Okay. Books that we hate. Mm-hmm. Books that we hate. Go Set a Watchman never should have been a book. Despised it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just a total money grab.
Yeah.
But it's funny because we listen to the audiobook. The audiobook is Reese Witherspoon. And she made like
she
it
made
was
it
delightful to listen to her voice.
Well,
so like we got through the whole thing. I don't think I would have gotten through it if I were reading.
The audiobooks that I like the most are the ones that are read
by the author.
The author who is a celebrity. So
yes.
I wonder if I would like fiction by someone like Claire Danes does The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
which
I didn't
I've
know
never
that.
Read. And so I'm like, I might like
oh,
that.
Oh, no, listen to it. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm sure that's really good.
I love people who can perform or who can like get the intention.
I love
off the
David
page.
Sedaris's audiobooks.
Yeah, because he's a performer.
Because he's a performer. I did my own audiobook for How to Be Married.
Did you?
While pregnant.
You
and
have
so
a good voice.
Like, but you can hear me like burping my way through. And it was so long and so hard that I totally like give kudos to audiobook recorders because it was rough and that was my own book and it was really hard. It was like 5 days of 8-hour days.
Wait, I want to listen to that. I love your voice. That's part of the reason I love Committed. I'm like, I mean, it's a good podcast, but I also I'm just like, Joe's got a great voice.
Yeah, but I mean, so podcast hosts without a great voice, like I really liked Dirty John. I couldn't stand his voice.
Horrible.
Awful.
And I also figured out the end of that early.
We all knew the end of it. You know, it also went on
It
went on 3 episodes too long.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyways, okay. What's the last book that made you cry?
The Mothers, because I just read it, and yeah, I was bawling during that one.
What about the last book that made you laugh?
Oh, Florida by Lauren Groff. And again, they're short stories, but and some of them are so sad and some of them are hilarious. And yeah, I was laughing. I was laughing out loud.
I have to read it. You told me already that I need to read it.
You have to read it. Pick it up tonight. When you're coming to BookSoup. I'm just going to grab a copy off the shelf and throw it at you.
What's the last book that made you angry?
Oh, Katie Ter's book about being on the campaign trail.
Because of
Donald
the content
Trump.
Or because of the way it was written?
No, just the content. Yeah. I mean, because I knew exactly what was going to happen in it. And then I don't think I should have read it because I allowed it to make me angry. Right. And I knew that was going to happen.
Right. What about the last book you felt like you learned a lot?
Also that. Okay. Also that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, actually, though, no. So I was just in Santa Fe and was reading The Wives of Los Alamos,
okay.
which is a book that came out like 10 years ago, I guess. And it's a fictionalized version of the wives of the men who were creating the atomic bomb. And I was staying on my friend is Charlie Oppenheimer and his grandfather is Robert Oppenheimer, who created the atomic bomb. And so we were staying on his ranch.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I was reading Wives of Los Alamos from his ranch.
Oh my gosh.
Really. And I learned so much because I was like, I didn't even know things. I'm like, what's the difference between an atomic bomb and a hydrogen bomb? And like, all of these things about the war that I didn't know.
So you're telling me there's a difference between those two things?
There is. And my husband, Nick, who is like a walking Wikipedia, can explain all of it to you. He's like, one of them involves plutonium and one of them involves something else.
Great.
Yep.
Who cares?
That's all you need to know.
That's all I need to know. What's a book that you feel proud that you've read?
Oh, gosh. It's so tough because I have patted myself on the back for reading so many books. I think The Power Broker is like my like prestige book on my shelves.
Yeah.
Because I mean it's huge.
Yeah.
It's so thick.
I love that.
But I read it in grad school at Columbia for journalism. Okay. And then I was just like, yeah. But I go back to it a lot because I'm fascinated by Robert Moses generally.
Mm-hmm.
And the planning of cities and the destruction of cities. When you've seen, I live in San Francisco now and watching the destruction of San Francisco by the freeways. And so, yeah, I think that's my prestige book.
And what about a book that you're embarrassed about never having read?
I lie about reading Catch 22.
Oh, I never read that.
Yeah, no, I tell people I read it. And Middlemarch. Yeah.
Oh, no thanks. Yeah. What about a book that you're embarrassed that you have read?
I was talking to someone the other day. Someone texted me and they're like, oh, I'm reading all your books and I love them all. And I'm like, don't read Love Rehab. It's the worst thing in the world. And so like, I'm embarrassed for reading and writing Love Rehab, but it was a practice novel. I was like writing it to see if I could do it.
I love that.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it. People have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What's a favorite book from childhood?
So I was a huge fan of all of the Judy Blume books and the Beverly Cleary books. And it's funny because I went through my garage and dug out all of my original copies of those in anticipation of having a girl child. And I have a boy child, but I think that's fine. My husband is like this big feminist and he read all of Judy Blume as a child.
A good book's a good book.
And he says that he cried at Blubber.
I've never read Judy Blume.
Oh my gosh. Like, you should go back and reread Judy Blume because it's actually...
She has an adult book I read. Is that true?
Summer Sisters?
Yeah.
I love Summer Sisters. It was so dirty. It was like it was like 50 Shades of Grey before 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. I liked it.
No, I liked it. I love Judy Blume. She has a bookstore in Key West that I desperately want to go do a book event at.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
You should go. Okay. What's a favorite book that was assigned to you in school? And then in parentheses that maybe you actually read, because I didn't read a lot of books assigned to me in school.
Isn't it? Do you remember Cliff Notes?
Yes.
Like, I mean, I read Cliff Notes. Mm-hmm. Like, how fucked up is
like
that?
Like, you went and bought them
you
at
went and
the bookstore.
Bought Cliff Notes at a bookstore. Yeah. So The Great Gatsby was actually assigned to me in school and then became my favorite book.
That's interesting.
And I really liked a lot of the things that were assigned in school. I mean, I'm also a big Shakespeare fan.
Oh, yay.
So,
welcome to my life.
Yeah, and like those, and those are things that I wouldn't have read otherwise. Right. So I love the concept of required reading. I mean, and there are books that were assigned in school. I think Handmaid's Tale was assigned at one point.
Really?
But I don't remember reading it in high school. And I only read it recently.
Okay.
And I think it was better reading it now because I don't think I would have appreciated it as a, you know, suburban white high school girl.
Sure.
With like no drama in my life.
Is there something that you could think that you would assign if you were like a high school teacher, a book that you think?
I mean, I don't know what they're assigning in high school right now. Yeah. I really hope that they're assigning a lot more diverse authors because,
truly.
I mean, I just think that my reading list was majority white men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can maybe count on one hand the books by women that were assigned, and certainly no women or men of color. And so, I mean, I just really hope that they're revamping these lists for, you know, diverse authors, diverse stories, world stories, stories
world
that come from places other than the United States.
Right. Yeah.
And other than one point of view. I did an interview with Marie Claire because they chose Charlotte Walsh as their September book club pick. Mm. They just started a book club. And I said, you know, I'm actually sick of writing about rich white women in New York City. So like I'm sick of publishers publishing books about rich white women in New York City. So I mean, granted, Charlotte Walsh is a rich white woman, but she goes home to her working class town.
And she's not in New York City. She's in Silicon Valley.
She's not in New York City. She's in Silicon Valley.
She's in Menlo or something.
She's in Menlo. She's in Atherton. Totally different. So I just hope high school reading lists are getting more diverse.
Sure. Were there any books that influenced you professionally, like made you want to be a journalist or want to start writing books?
Well, it was really more journalists and newspaper and magazine articles that made me want to be a journalist.
Are there any stories
I mean, everything that Tom Wolfe ever wrote.
Okay.
And actually, because Tom Wolfe was such a journalist and magazine writer who also then became a novelist, and, you know, Bonfire of the Vanities. Mm-hmm. Bonfire of the Vanities is such a great example of fiction that reads like nonfiction, because he did exactly what I do with my books. And, you know, right. he does a lot of research, and he is a journalist and a reporter. Right. And I'd forgotten about that, actually, until you sent me this list, that mm-hmm. how influential that book was on me.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I still have to read that. That's on my list.
It's great.
It's on my list. One of my books to go back to.
But his, you know, after he passed away, I went back and reread so many of his old magazine stories mm-hmm. too. And they're just fantastic. And he has one, and there's, he talks about, you know, gearing up to write Bonfire and how important he thought about writing a book about class and race in New York City for years and years. And he was convinced that someone else was going to write it. And then, of course, no one else is writing it. Mm-hmm. And how important he thought it was for fiction to reflect the reality that we're living in right now.
Sure.
And I thought about that so much with Charlotte Walsh. I'm like, mm-hmm. it's incumbent. There's hardly any political fiction out there. Mm-hmm. Certainly none that casts a woman
right.
as the protagonist. And how important it is for fiction to show what is happening
sure.
right now.
Well, that's what, you know, do you watch Shonda Rhimes shows?
Of course I do.
She talks about that.
How can you not? She has every show on television.
Yeah, Thursday night you have to watch. But yeah. she talks about how, like, it's important that the doctors in Seattle Grace, now Sloan Memorial or whatever the fuck it's called.
Is that what it's called now?
Gray Sloan Memorial.
How is that show still on?
It's my favorite show. So
no, I love... No, I'm not saying I don't love it.
No.
Yeah. I cry at every episode.
If you don't cry at every episode, you could just turn this podcast off and never come back.
If you don't cry at every episode, there's something wrong with you.
We need to call people and
but
we
you
do an
should,
intervention.
Yeah, you should stop taking so much Zoloft. But... Yeah. And I'm on Zoloft and I still cry at every episode.
It's like 13 seasons.
I know, but that's the thing. I'm like, I don't know how it's still on, how it's still going.
It's so good. The characters are so good. And it's diverse and people enjoy it.
It is diverse. And it was diverse before diversity was like such a thing.
Right, right. And it, yeah, I mean, she does a great job of being like, you know, doctors look different.
Right.
Doctors aren't all George Clooney.
Well, in the beginning, like, all the doctors were just stupid hot.
Yeah. I mean, they all are still, like, really
they're
attractive.
They're all really attractive.
But, like, they're, like, different colors. And,
they
like,
are different
some
colors,
are short and, like,
some are
thicker.
Short and some are, yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
They're a little different. Like,
yeah.
They have a woman
but they are
in a hijab
still,
now.
Like, ridiculously hot. We have one, like, ear, nose, and throat doctor for the baby. Who I'm like, I swear to God, he's like not a real doctor. He's like the doctor they parade in to be like sexy doctor.
Yeah.
When they, like,
well, that's what I think
something.
My husband is. My husband's like a really cute doctor and he's an OB. And he's had patients be like, I need to see someone else because they've been embarrassed because he's like too cute.
Because he's too cute. Mm-hmm. See, I think after you have a kid, you're like, stop being embarrassed. You're like, sure. I'm actually, you know what? Everyone has seen all of my junk down there.
Who cares?
I could care less.
Who cares? Yeah. I get it. I get not wanting to have like a super hot doctor.
Super hot doctor all down in your stuff.
Yeah, I get it. I'm like, fine. If you're worried about being attracted to my husband, you need a different doctor.
You need
anyways,
a different
lady.
Doctor anyway.
Back off.
Get out.
if you weren't a writer or a podcaster mm-hmm. or any of the jobs that you have currently, what do you think you would do?
I would like to be a large animal vet. Okay. Or a paleontologist.
Ooh.
So I told Nick this the other day. I'm like, we need to figure out what we're going to do when we're grown-ups.
Okay.
And he's like, we are grown-ups. And I'm like, I don't know. Like,
how
long is this really going to last? I'm like, I want to go back to school to be a large animal vet, and I want us to live in Wyoming. And he's
amazing.
Just like, okay, whatever. But I think it would be great. Vet school is really hard and really expensive.
Yeah.
So we got to sell copies of the books.
Yeah. Get Charlotte Walsh.
Go get Charlotte Walsh.
There's a link in the show notes.
Hope it turns into a TV show because I'm going to have to go to vet school now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I do want a next act.
Okay.
That's kind of completely separate from media.
Got it.
Because I've been in media since I was 18.
Yeah.
And I want to try something different.
Sure. And then you can like come back for your third act and write about
being a large animal vet or a paleontologist.
About your time in Wyoming.
Exactly.
You know, the mountains.
I feel like I could do both large animal vet and paleontologist, like search for dinosaur bones at the same time.
Why not?
Yeah. And then I'm going to write a thriller about it, obviously.
Perfect. And then you'll come back on the show like 20 years from now
exactly.
and be like, remember when I told you
that I was going to do this? And you're like,
I did it.
I did
it.
I
believe you.
Yeah.
If I ever have a large animal, I'll take it to you.
Perfect. I'm going to be so good with them. They're going to love me.
I love it. Well, you kind of, I mean, this question's maybe a little leading, but what's a book that's not written by you
mm-hmm.
that you've read that you would like to see turned into a movie or TV show?
Oh my God. There's so many. I mean, I'm in shock, like especially when I'm in LA. And there's a lot of books that have not been turned into a movie mm-hmm. or TV show. And then I find out that it's because they've been just like caught in development hell for so long. So, I mean, it's actually hard, so hard for me to answer. Because there's somebody that would be, and there's a lot of books that are really great on the page too, that I then see optioned that I'm like, why?
No.
Why did you do this? I just finished Less, actually, which I saw.
We're doing that after this.
Yeah.
After we do Motherhood.
Which is great, which I think could make a really excellent kind of dark comedy.
I mean, you have to assume that's been optioned, right?
I do have to assume it's been optioned.
I mean, it won the Pulitzer.
Like, I know.
It's not
I
like mean, yeah, everyone's heard of it by now.
No, I'm assuming that it's been optioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, everything gets optioned.
Right.
And then, like, nothing ever ends up getting
made.
Yeah.
That's the sad part.
Well, and I wish that, like, it was just more transparent.
Right. Like, it was like, if you option it, you have this amount of time before
You have 18 months, which I think is too long today. I'm like,
right.
If you haven't moved on it, like, if there hasn't been, like, progress in 3 months,
right.
Give
me back my book.
Maybe we're done. Yeah. Because after 18 months, no one cares anymore.
Right. That's true. And plus, by the time you actually make it, then it's an additional.
It takes time. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, the clock is ticking, which is why we're like, with Charlotte, we're like, all right, well, the clock is ticking.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed for Charlotte.
Fingers crossed for Charlotte.
Okay, this is my real favorite question. I stole it from the New York Times. If you could require the current president of the United States of America to read one book, what would it be?
Blubber by Judy Blume.
Okay.
Yep. I just want Donald Trump to have to read what it's like to be a young girl in America.
Yes.
Yes.
That's amazing. All right, we're going to wrap up. Is there anything else you'd like to say today?
No, I think that's it. Oh, I want to tell everyone that we're wearing the same t-shirt now.
You'll see it in the picture. We're wearing the same shirt.
That, like, I mean, totally, we've never met in person.
No.
We're wearing the same Phenomenal Woman t-shirt.
Yeah, shout out to Mina Harris.
Yay, Mina.
Yeah. Okay, great. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about Motherhood by Sheila Hetty. And go read it if you haven't read it yet. All right, bye. That does it for us today on The Stacks. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Joe, for being our guest. Her book, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, is in stores now and is the inaugural pick for the Marie Claire Magazine's book club. So use the hashtag ReadWithMC to follow along with Charlotte. Make sure you're subscribed to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. Don't forget, Patreon is an amazing way to help support the show. So go to patreon.com/thestacks and contribute what you can. Thank you all so much for listening. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite. Our theme music comes from Tagirigis. And this show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.